You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Those Steps from Hell.
Yes.
Yeah, good times.
Everybody talks about the Steps from Hell, and they are the Steps from Hell. All right, so I think we're good. Are you ready?
I'm good.
Okay, here we go. Tommy Starr hanging out with you on the Sound Atlas and in the studio today, tonight, on the mic, the hot seat, whatever you want to call it, is a friend of the local music scene, a gentleman who's not only been involved with the music scene as far as up on the stage, but also in front of the stage, some of your favorite bands in the past, which we will get to.
Yes.
But the one and only John Fox.
Yay.
There you are. How are you today, my friend?
I'm good. How you doing, Thomas?
I'm doing very well. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a few months. How are you doing?
It's been a while. Day to day.
Yeah. Where are you living at now?
Lewisburg.
Lewisburg, Kentucky. How far is that from BG?
It's about 40 or so miles, mm-hmm. about an hour.
Yeah.
Depending on where you're going in Bowling Green.
Yeah. So, in Bowling Green today, because you come by to see me, we're going to chit-chat a little bit. We're going to be talking about not only your involvement in the music scene, but if you're cool with it, like talked about some of the bands that you've been into over the years.
Oh, that'd be great.
Past and present.
Yeah.
And not only local, we may talk about the gentleman that's on your shirt, Ace Frehley.
Yes.
So you never know. So, right now, we're going to start it off. Let's talk about how you got involved in the local music scene. Not necessarily in bands, but who you were into, who you were like, hey, these guys are cool. I'm going to go see them at such and such club. Some early days.
Okay, how I got into the scene.
Yeah, who was like a band that you heard about or you heard a song, you thought, well, these guys are from here? I need to go see them.
Okay, the way it happened is my dad.
Uh-huh.
He was in a band called High Tide.
I remember that band. I don't remember that band as in I saw them, but I remember you telling me about that band. Yeah.
And they used to pack Picasso's mm-hmm. when it was right behind us.
Yeah.
And they were just a 60s, 70s cover band. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing. No. They were good for what they did.
Yeah.
And
seems they released a tape.
Yeah. They put out a tape called Where Do We Go From Here? But I've always loved music. So I'd go to as many practices as I could with them and just sit there in awe. Like, wow, that's a band playing 10 feet away from me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 10, 12, mm-hmm. whatever. And, of course, they're getting bigger and bigger in the area. And then this little band comes out of nowhere called Government Cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Wiped them off the face of the earth. Government Cheese took every single human being in Warren County away from every other band in this area. And it was just a vast wasteland unless you were at a cheese show.
Uh-huh.
So that's how I got into it was, you know, these guys must be really good because, you know, I thought High Tide, they were on a pedestal. I'm worshiping at them.
Well, of course, you had a connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a band to come along that played their own songs on top of that.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
Uh-huh.
And then, you remember that album came out like 30 years ago? What was it? Let Us Out of Here, Get Us Out of Here?
Yep. It was a compilation.
Local compilation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to go to Record Bar in the mall. I think it was Record Bar. Music Land was on one end. Record Bar was on the other.
That is correct.
I would go in there and I would ask for that tape all the time.
For Government Cheese?
No, for the Get Us Out of Here.
Oh, Get Us Out of Here. I'm sorry.
But they never had it. It was always sold out.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how my thing started with the local scene.
You heard about Government Cheese and then the compilation, and I think it's Let Us Out of Here. I think that's the name of it.
I think that's what it is.
And so somehow you discovered that, and that was like the beginnings.
Yeah, it turned into Soakie Fair. Friday nights, Saturday nights, Battle of the Bands. Mm-hmm. All my friends were hanging out in the grass, you know, drinking, chasing girls, being stupid. And I'm like, nope, Battle of the Bands. I got to go over there.
Yeah.
So I'd be by myself watching, you know, just band after band after band. I mean, that was like my drug or drink, if you will. And I was probably more influenced by watching all those Battle of the Bands year after year after year.
Sure.
I mean, that's how I discovered Metallica.
The Soakie Fair?
No, not at Soakie Fair, but it was back in 86. Cliff Burton had just died.
Yeah.
And you know the Carl Casper car show up in Louisville?
I do not.
Well, it's this big car show. And my dad would take me, and he's a big car guy. He's like, look, it's a Mustang powered by a Chevy engine. Ah. And I'm like, yeah, okay. There's a sign that says Battle of the Bands. Can I go hang out there? And he'd say, you know, fine, go ahead. You know, you're not into the cars. Mm-hmm. But there was a local man, looked like they were all high school kids, that dedicated a song to Cliff Burton from Metallica. I'd heard the name Metallica before, but mm-hmm. didn't know. And they played, oh my God, what did they play? Fade to Black, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Sanitarium. It's been 30 years.
Sure.
But I was like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. You know, this band is playing that, and that's a real band song.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I discovered Metallica and how I discovered that, you know, regular people can play what these famous people are playing.
Sure.
I mean, I know it sounds stupid, whatever, but
now when you're young, when you're your young mind
and
stuff
just
like that.
Learning how to pick up a guitar, mm-hmm. you know, you see somebody playing Seek and Destroy, you think they are a god.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how it was for me.
So you were at up in Louisville at a car show. Mm-hmm. You saw a sign for Battle of the Bands. You went over to check that out. One of the bands there played a Metallica tune. Yep. And you were like, wait a minute, Metallica? How cool is this? And you're saying that's how that got you into Metallica.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's how I discovered Metallica, started listening to them a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it wasn't until Justice for All that I actually became a big Metallica fan. Mm. But I digress. It was the local bands. That's what did it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, as far as going to the Soakey Fair Battle of the Bands, mm-hmm. can you remember any of the bands that you saw back then?
Oh, man.
What year are we talking? You're talking like 80s?
Let's see. We're probably anywhere from 89 on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember band names,
mm-hmm.
but I remember people in bands. There's a guy I went to high school with named Tim Buckner mm-hmm. at Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know him, but my friend Mike Vertrees did.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike was like, man, this guy is awesome. He can play anything. He wrote a symphony, and I was just intimidated by the guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I go to this Battle of the Bands back in like 1991, and this band gets on stage. I'm like, oh, that's Buckner.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And I was just in awe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not only is it, you know, a local band who's kicking ass, but this is a peer. This is a guy that I'm in school with.
Someone you actually know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's tangible now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really cool.
Now, what was the name of the first band that you actually, like, you formed the band, mm-hmm. you started the band, somebody asked you to join the band, however you want to put it?
As long as I've been playing and doing stuff, I've only had two bands that ever actually played out. Every other band was just living room or garage. But the first, we'll call it a band,
mm-hmm.
was called Crazed.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible name, terrible band. It was Nick Sanchez, Marshall Williams, Tim Howard.
Mm-hmm.
It was his first band also,
mm-hmm.
and me. And my cousin Spencer Dunn,
mm-hmm.
and we were bad. We were horrible. We probably drank more than we practiced, you know, typical high school thing. But we practiced at Nick's house, and his mom finally got sick of that. She's like, y'all got to quit. So we started practicing in my garage.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim, if I've told this story 100 times, Tim's told it 100 times, but he used to not have cymbal stands. So we used fishing line from the rafters to hold his cymbals. And if you know Timmy Howard, when he hits a cymbal, he's hitting it like Thor hitting the ground with the hammer.
He's a heck of a drummer.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
That cymbal would come flying at you 100 miles an hour. It's a wonder none of us got decapitated. But anyway, all we knew was cover songs, right? So we're playing Hell's Bells one Sunday morning, garage door open, like 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. Across the street is a church. Yeah, we didn't get to practice much longer after that.
Yeah, probably they were like, no, we're not having that. Yeah. So how about the first band that actually played out, like your first gig, where you were on stage and going, they're here for us or the people after us, whichever.
It was a version of Slander. an early version. Mm-hmm. I think we were called Fetish. It was me and Chuck Payne and his brother Matt and their brother Bobby, and the singer was Jared Sparber. It was a bad night. Mm. You know, of course, you know, we weren't good by any stretch of the imagination.
Where did you play?
Susie Q's.
Susie Q's here in BG.
It was us, U-Turn. You remember them?
I do not.
They were from, I don't know, Owensboro, Paducah, something like that, and 6-4.
Oh, so your very first show, you were opening for 6-4.
Yeah, I emailed King, and I was like, hey, man, you going to let my band open up for you? He was like, hey, show in December at Susie Q's. I'm like, all right, we'll be there. So, of course, in our excitement, we started drinking at like 4 in the afternoon. So we get up on stage, and we're doing all originals except for Shout at the Devil, which we invited Chris to come up and sing because, see, we had fired him, you know, before that. Uh-huh. Another whole big long story. And Psychotherapy, which I did lead vocals on.
Nice.
So here we are. We're all, you know, feeling good. The adrenaline's kicking in. Mm-hmm. Mr. King keeps coming up to the stage and handing me rattlesnakes. And I'm, you know, teetering on the edge of the stage. It's time for Psychotherapy. I'm like, this is my moment. I get up there and I count it off. 1, 2, 3, 4. And we start playing. Uh-huh. Now, you know Psychotherapy.
Sure.
It's like 2 minutes, two and a half minutes.
Yeah.
It went on for 10, 15 minutes probably.
Y'all just couldn't wrap it up.
I just kept singing. Yeah. I would not stop. It was just, Psychotherapy, Psychotherapy. Let's do it again. Psychotherapy. I mean, it just went on and on and on. Yeah. Didn't play again on stage for another couple of years.
Can you remember the date of that first show by any chance at Susie Q's? Your first?
December, I want to say the first. Actually, my step-grandmother, I called her grandmother, she actually died that day.
Oh.
So yeah. I remember dedicating Other Side to her.
Yeah.
Tells you how old that song is.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to say it was like December 1st, 2nd, or 3rd of 2000.
2000. So in 2000, you made your debut on stage at Susie Q's in Bowling Green.
And didn't do it again for 2 more years.
Why did it take 2 years?
I'm easily intimidated. You know, I've been writing songs since, you know, 6th grade. And, you know, I'm a fan of my own stuff. I was like, hey, this is cool. You know, look what I'm doing. Eh. Friends would tell you that, you know, sounds good, but they're your friends. Do you really believe them?
Well, I mean,
you know what I mean?
I think a really, really, really good friend will totally be honest with you, even if it hurts your feelings a little
bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody, you know, I just had in my head, everybody's just being nice. And I was into the scene so much, especially from, say, you know, like 93, 94, up until about 2000, that 5 or 6 years, I called it like the golden time for the scene. So much great talent during those few years. And I'd go check out these bands, and it's like, man, listen to what they're writing. And I'd go home and play my stuff. I had a little 4-track, and I'd put my little tape in, and I'd listen to it. And I would think, you know, yeah, it's cool. I like it, but man, these guys here just blew my mind, you know?
Yeah.
So I was easily intimidated. And it wasn't until Chuck Payne and Chris Prophet, who could care less if they hurt your feelings. You know, I mean, I love the guys. They're like brothers, but they'll tell you if something's working or not.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I love those guys to death. And when both of them were like, yeah, this works. You know, this, yeah, keep writing. Let's do another one of your songs.
You thought, hey, they're being straight. Maybe I do have something here.
Yeah, so by the time Slander actually got going, the version with me in it, then, yeah, it was like, yeah, okay, you're not, I'm not stopping now.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Slander. We're going to get to Slander, but I want to back up just a little bit.
Let's do it.
I know that later in your local music career, we'll call it, you actually played with 6-4 a few times, but I want to go back. You were talking about maybe the late 90s or the mid, we'll say mid 90s up, Were you ever a Six Floor fan back then when they first started?
See, I met John King. I met him probably 6 months before Six Floor formed.
Oh.
Met him at Thursdays. Me and my friend Steve, we were able to get in even though we were underage. Mm-hmm. We figured out if you go in a couple hours before the band starts.
Mm-hmm. You're already in there.
Yeah, so yeah. They're not going to come around carding you. So,
yeah.
I remember me and Steve were going to start a band. We were going to use the name Tarantula Buzz. We had a bunch of songs written, you know. We got it from that Gilby Clark song.
Uh-huh.
And we had a drummer that we were talking to. So, you know, everything was falling together. And we needed a singer. And it was open mic night. And this band Cannabis gets up on stage. John King and Josh, I can't remember his last name to save my life. But anyway, they're both playing guitar and singing. And when they got done, me and Steven looked at each other and said, that's the guy.
Oh.
So let's go talk to him.
Uh-huh.
I go talk to John. He goes talks to Josh.
Uh-huh.
Man, we weren't agreeing on the singer.
Yeah.
But we hit it off with John. We actually went back to his place. He played us some early versions of Six Floor songs from their first CD with different lyrics, different titles, different riffs, but like bits and pieces that you could tell were taken out. And
sure.
So I was like, man, this dude is a great writer, mm-hmm. and I love his voice. He's got that Lane Staley thing going.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was instantly a fan of John's. And then when Six Floor got together, they would do the open mic nights before they had a name. Mm-hmm. They'd come in to, you know, 4 or 6 songs. And I was like, man, there's something. You hear bands talk about chemistry and magic and whatnot. They're one of the few bands, especially that original lineup with, you know, Dave Shaver and George Collard and Jared Duke and John.
Mm-hmm.
That was real chemistry on stage, mm-hmm. those four. And it was like, okay, if they can find that, then I know I can.
Sure.
You know, you're just going to have to do a lot of looking and trial and error, but it's possible in this area, you know. So
yeah.
I was really influenced by them a lot.
Well, I know that you've been friends with them for a long, long time. Because, I mean, when you and I met and got to be friends, mm-hmm. you was, you know, we would talk about local music.
Yeah.
And you would bring me, like, here's some early Six Floor demos
yeah.
and stuff like that. I mean, I still have that stuff today. And I got most of that stuff from you.
Yeah.
Because I met Six Floor back in 1995. Matter of fact, I was the first person to play them on the radio, and I was the first person to interview them. And the way that came about is I got a phone call. I was up at that time it was New Rock. It's Revolution mm-hmm. now. I got a call one night from Kim Mason, and she said, hey, I guess she was like managing the club, Gary's.
Yeah.
And she said, I got a band playing tonight. Is there any way I can bring them by? You could put them on the radio or play a song or something to help promote the show. And I immediately was like, well, I thought to myself, I've never done that before.
Yeah.
How this is going to go. But I was like, sure. And so she brought them up there, and we interviewed them, and we played something off their first CD. And that's the first time that ever been played on the radio and the first time that ever been interviewed.
Yeah.
And John asked me probably every 2 or 3 years, man, did you ever find that tape with that? And sadly, I do not have it.
Oh.
There's very few things I don't have, but that is one of them. I don't have when Six Floor was up there, and not too long after that, Daddy Longleg came up there, and I interviewed them. Yeah.
Now, talk about intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
Thursdays. Did you ever go to Thursdays, did it close before
Thursdays
you?
Is one of those places that when I kind of found out about it, it was about ready to shut down. Yeah.
Well, you gotta imagine Thursdays, dark little club. They had, you know, round tables that, you know, were pretty high, and they were laminated on top with pictures of like local people, famous people, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They had like this big rabbit painted on the wall, Jim Morrison, you know. It was just dirty, but it was the coolest club I've ever been into in all my life.
I've always heard good things about it, but I never went there.
Me and my friend, Brian Pickrell, we walked in there one night, and I hear something. As soon as we walk in, and I turn around, and I see this band playing, and it's not the band that grabs me, it's the guitar player. And I wanted to put my guitar down. After a couple of songs, I asked the bartender, I'm like, who is this? Oh, it's Daddy Longleg. Like, oh my God. So I'd heard the name before, but never heard him. I'm like, who's that guitar player? Oh, that's Mike Thompson. Oh, man, I was just, oh no, 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 no. I wouldn't even talk to him after the show. You know, I wouldn't approach him. I remember I might have said something to Fenner, you know, kind of heading out, you know, hey, good show. Might have been something like that, but I wouldn't even look at Mike. And it was probably 10 years after that before I ever spoke to Mike. But once I did, we became tight.
Mike's a good guy.
We used to talk on the phone all the time. I mean, I know I'm veering off.
No, you're doing great.
I don't know if you remember, several years ago, we played somewhere, and I used to be the bass player in Slander.
I remember that.
Switched to guitar. I never wanted to be a lead player. I just wanted to be the cool guy, did rhythm, stood in the back, looked cool, smoked cigarettes, write songs. But I got thrust out into this, and I can't play lead. And I remember you coming up to me after a show, and you were like, John, you are the lead guitar player. You need to be up there shredding and making faces. And I mean, you just really ripped me from one end to the other.
I always thought you were a good player. I enjoyed it.
And I thank you for that sincerely, because I went home that night and I'm like, oh man, Tommy's mad at me. Because you know how much I love you and I value your opinion. I always come to you first with stuff. So the next morning, I sheepishly sent Mike an email. I'm like, dude, do you have any tricks for guitar? He sent me back probably 50 lessons. He said, this is stuff I still do every day.
Yeah.
And a couple months later, we played on the square in Morgantown. It was us, 6-4. And, you know, 6-4 guys are in their van hanging out. We had a pretty good crowd out front. You know, Morgantown used to love us.
Sure.
And I break into a solo. And I remember all of a sudden, those four guys are standing in front of me, staring at me, jaws on the floor. And I'm like, okay, I think I just made Tommy Starr proud when he hears this.
Well, I mean, so, I always thought you were a good guitar player. And the thing of it is, a good guitar player is not necessarily Yngwie Malmsteen. Just somebody who can, as far as I'm concerned, put out some sweet riffs, man.
Yeah.
And grab you. And you did that plenty of times.
Well, yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. But I actually owe probably a big part of my quote-unquote career to you and Mike.
Well.
You know, if you hadn't lit that fire under me to actually get better, which actually made the band better, then, you know, I wouldn't have ever talked to Mike. Mike wouldn't have told me things. And, you know, I probably would have just let intimidation get me and, you know, fizzled out somewhere.
We all need a helping hand once in a while. We all need a little bit of, you know, somebody to come along and build the confidence. We all need that once in a while. So, I mean, if I did that, that's great. I'm glad I did. I didn't know that I did that.
Yeah.
I think we were just talking, and I just kind of put my 2 cents in. But I'm glad that I did something, and you got something out of it. It was positive. That's
really,
great.
Really, yeah. Truly. Yeah. I honestly think I'm going to get your face tattooed on my right cheek.
No, please don't.
And I'm going to get Mike Thompson's on my left cheek, and I'm going to get it so you're facing each other. Where it looks like you're kissing. Maybe I can make my butt squinch or something.
Yeah, I can't get my mind to stop visualizing that. And probably tonight when I'm laying in bed trying to go to sleep, I'm going to roll over and go, I think I'm ready to finally go to sleep. And that's going to pop in my head. And I'm going to wake right back up.
Well, then I've done my job. Interview over.
No, not quite. We have much more to talk about.
Good, let's do it.
We're going to get to Slander in a bit, because I know Slander is going to be a good chunk of conversation, because not only did you guys... You were around for a while. You put out a lot of great music. You did some touring. I was on the road with you some. Yep. But I want to talk about some bands that you are into. Not local, but like what's on your shirt.
Oh, like major bands. Okay.
Yeah, major bands. Because I know you're a big music guy.
You know, it's so funny. I listened to your Dean Collier interview. And it was a lot like listening to me. You know, because he talks about, he too comes from the MTV generation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I remember being little and riding in the car with my mom, had the radio on, and there's a couple of, two or three songs that stick out in my head, which I still consider, you know, some of my favorite songs today. Heartache Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, God, I was 3 or 4 years old singing that.
Mm-hmm.
And asking my mom, you know, why don't they just go to the doctor if they're going to have a heartache tonight? Lonesome Loser.
Mm-hmm.
Escape, the Pina Colada song. I don't care what anybody says. I will fight you to the death. That song has got killer melody.
It's fun.
It's a fun song. Yeah. The lyrics are cheesy and horrible, but yeah. It tells a story, and it's so great, and mm-hmm. You can't help but feel good by the end of that song.
That's right.
You know? So I grew up on radio that way. Mm-hmm. And then MTV came out and, Stray Cats and Billy Idol, you know, like Dean was saying. That's where I discovered Styx, Mr. Roboto. I'm one of those guys, when I discover a band, especially when it's been out for a while, I'll discover them and then I go backwards.
Sure.
And start.
What did you miss?
Yeah, you know, it's like, okay, this Mr. Roboto thing is cool.
Uh-huh.
Let's go back, you know, Cornerstone, hey, that's a pretty good album. Equinox, hey, that's pretty good. Paradise Theater, probably one of the greatest albums. Man, I love that.
Would that be in your top five? Top 10, maybe?
Top 20, at least.
Top 20, at least.
Yeah, if not top 10, top 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that album really... Everything about it, you know, just the cover, the back cover,
mm-hmm.
The songs, Half Penny, Two Penny, you know, it's like one of my favorite songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, J.J. Young was a badass.
That's right.
You know, Tommy Shaw, no slouch either,
nope,
you know,
nope.
Too much time on my hands.
That's right.
But,
you know your Styx, don't you?
Hey, I've been wanting to do an acoustic cover of Come Sail Away for 10 years.
Yeah, it might happen, right?
Nobody will do it with me. They're like, really? Come Sail Away about the aliens and angels? And
you never know. You may do that someday.
Yeah, you wait and see. Don't make me sing it.
Yeah.
I'll be like Cartman. Have you seen it on South Park where Cartman sings it real fast, the whole song?
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
But no, just MTV was the big influence on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Quiet Riot, you know, Come On, Feel the Noise. And then as I got older, I found out, you know, Come On, Feel the Noise and Mama, We're All Crazy Now comes from a band called Slade.
Yep.
And they have a song called Run, Run Away, which I requested earlier.
Mm-hmm.
My Oh My, which is such a great song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, they sound like Sweet. You know, Ballroom Blitz. I mean, is there a better song than that? So everything I was hearing on MTV and on the radio, I would either go back in their discography, or if they were new, then I would check out their influences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, my dad plays, so, you know, I grew up, his favorite band is Grand Funk Railroad.
Oh, I love that band.
So, you know, I grew up on Grand Funk and the Doors and the Beatles and the Stones. And, you know, so I have musical knowledge
mm-hmm.
as far as like the great music.
Yeah.
But some of it I knew of but didn't appreciate until I heard this band talk about this band influencing them. And I thought they were so badass that this band really has to be amazing. You know, that's how I discovered how great the Beatles were.
You Beatles, know, one of your favorite bands?
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
I know that's a touchy subject for people. You either, I heard what you said the other day, overrated, blah, blah, blah. Which, you know, I don't blame you because you're either an Elvis man or a Beatles
that's
man.
That's right, and I'm Elvis all the way. Yeah. I got nothing against the Beatles. There's some Beatles songs that I like. It's just that sometimes it seems, well, people could say this about Elvis. They could say, if you're an Elvis fan, that's almost cliche.
Yeah.
You know, but I kind of look at that like the Beatles. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with the Beatles, but a lot of times people, they throw that one right out.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've met young people who, for some reason, I think maybe they're just saying that because they've heard someone else say that or because their dad's into it. I don't know, just something about the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, because I know that they toured some, they released a lot of records, and then, you know, they stopped touring like halfway through.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like, you know, a band is supposed to cut a record and go on tour and just keep repeating that process.
You know, another band that's kind of like that, not, they're not as profound or whatever as the Beatles, but Nirvana is turning into one of those bands now where people are like, you know, oh, I love Nirvana. Okay, name me a song.
Exactly.
Teen Spirit. No. Go back to Sliver.
Yes.
Tell me something off of Bleach.
Right.
You know, don't just give me the hits.
Right.
You know, they're going to be one of those bands. I mean, they already are. You know, people either love them or hate them. Mm-hmm. Just like the Beatles.
Yeah.
And it's weird comparing the two, but I'm not really comparing them. I'm just putting them in the same boat.
I understand.
On how people look at them.
Yeah, I understand. You know, not necessarily the same, but kind of sometimes when you see people wearing a t-shirt for a band, and you're like, there's no way in hell they're into that band.
Yeah.
And you want to ask them to name a couple of albums.
See these little punk kids walking around with their Motorhead shirt. Like, yeah, come on, yeah, yeah.
You don't see me wearing Taylor Swift, man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. But that's what you get when you're a real deal music fan. It you know, music is a big deal, and
you get pissed off about it.
Yeah, it aggravates you. You're like, man, what the hell is this? You're over here wearing a Motorhead shirt, and you know Ace of Spades, and that's it.
Yeah.
And some of them, you're lucky they know that. They just know that's the new thing now, and that's why they're wearing the shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, man, you're selling yourself short. Go out there and check it out.
Yeah.
And then go buy the shirt.
Yeah, because I guarantee once you hear it, you'll be buying more than shirts.
Yeah.
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 You'll be, well, if you're listening to Motorhead, you're probably going to buy meth and Jack Daniels.
But well, I've never done that. I'm a big Motorhead fan. But the first time I heard Motorhead, I had the same reaction that if you've seen the Lemmy movie, there's a piece in there where James Hetfield is talking about his voice. Said that when he first heard Motorhead, he couldn't believe that somebody was singing like that. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought when I first heard Motorhead. But we're getting off. We're supposed to be talking about you, not me.
Well, see, they are a prime example of MTV influencing me. Mm-hmm. Remember the heavy metal half hour they used to do Monday through Friday at like 2 or 2:30?
Yeah.
I would run home from school to either catch it going off or just coming on. I can't remember what time it came on. I was always missing some part of it. Mm-hmm. But I remember I had just started wanting to play guitar and the Ace of Spades video, and he's got like the little puppy face on one drum head and the kitten and the little kids and I'm like, oh my god, that's so cool. And then, you know, he's shredding the lead out in front and the crowd's going crazy, and Lemmy never moves. He just stands there, you know, neck up singing. And I was terrified. I was horrified. I was mesmerized. I was in love. I was like, oh my God. You know, listen to that dude's voice. I think he's going to shoot blood out of his mouth in a minute. You know, it just sounds like he's got razor blades and tacks in his throat. But listen to that bass sound. And there's only three of them, you know?
Yeah.
I got all excited. And that's how I got into Motorhead.
Yeah. Now, we want to talk about Kiss, because I know you're a big Kiss fan.
Big Kiss fan.
Let me ask you this real quick. What are your top three bands? Something like that. Give me, a top three.
Okay. I'd say Kiss, Guns N' Roses, probably Alice in Chains.
Those are your top three.
Which is, it's unfair of me to say that about Alice in Chains, because I've not bought any of the new stuff. I've not got, you know, Blue Gives Way to Black or Devilport Dinosaurs here, and they got a new one coming out, and I like what I've heard off of it, that one song, but I probably won't get it. It's I think it's a Lane Staley thing.
Sure, I understand. Kiss. Let's talk about Kiss.
Let's do it.
Did you ever see Kiss live?
I can't remember how many times, 10 or 12 times.
You've seen them that many times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
85 was my first time at Municipal Auditorium in Nashville.
Asylum tour.
Yep. With Black and Blue, November 30th, 1985.
Yep. I saw them the day before that in Little Rock. We which was the tour opener. Yeah.
And that's when they actually did like King of the Mountain, Any Way You Slice It. I think they did it those two shows.
Mm-hmm. And that's what in the first couple of shows, the stage was the cover of the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they got rid of that pretty quick.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah, Paul said he didn't like stepping on himself or something stupid like that, you know.
Yeah.
But that was a good show. Paul wore the big feather pants.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Gene was doing the Karate Kid kick every other move.
Sure. Yep.
But and the drums came out.
Uh-huh.
You know, which was cool, but you know, I wanted to see the drums rise. Uh-huh. I'd never seen that, you know, other than, you know, videos, whatever.
Yeah.
But the drums came out.
Uh-huh.
And Eric Carr is just cool. He's a little bitty old guy.
Yeah. So Eric Carr, thinking of the drummers of Kiss, Eric Carr, Peter Criss, and Eric Singer, who's the best of the three?
Singer.
Singer, you think's the best drummer Kiss has ever had?
Yeah, I think he's got the groove that Peter had back in those first couple albums.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of Peter's groove, I think of that breakdown in Parasite from Alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the way he's keeping that beat there, just that's Peter at his best.
That's a wicked album.
Mm-hmm. And but he's got like the technical side of him, I think, like Eric Carr had.
Uh-huh.
Just not as over the top. You don't need, you know, four kick drums and 17 toms and electric drums. And
he knows how to use what he's got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a big Eric Singer fan.
Okay, what's the best Kiss album?
Makeup or no makeup?
You do both if you like.
Okay, my favorite with makeup, there's two. Hotter Than Hell and Rock and Roll Over.
Mm-hmm.
Without makeup, probably Lick It Up and Revenge.
Wow, most everybody always says Revenge, and they just leave it at that.
Yeah,
that's cool. You went with Lick It Up.
Yeah, I take my spells where it used to be just straight Revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And a few years ago, we were talking about doing a Kiss show.
Mm-hmm.
Downpour was.
I remember you talked to me about that.
And we started kicking around ideas for songs. So I had to go back and re-listen to a lot of stuff.
Sure.
And that's where my love for Hotter Than Hell and Rock and Roll Over came back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I rediscovered Lick It Up. You know, a lot of people say, you know, that Creatures is better than Lick It Up.
Hmm.
And I'm like, no. I have to disagree.
I think they're both pretty good.
They are. Yeah. They're put them together, and you got one massive badass album.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, I prefer Lick It Up.
Alive or Alive 2? Or Alive 3?
Alive 2 is the first album I ever had.
Is that the first album you ever bought?
Yeah, I was 3 or 4, I picked it out. My mom got it for me.
Your mom lets you buy that at 3 or 4 years old with Gene spitting the blood?
It gets better.
Uh-huh.
I remember waking up the next morning hearing music. So I get up out of bed and I go to the bathroom, and mom's in the bathroom doing her hair for work. And I had a little bitty record player, little portable thing, and I see that red album spinning.
Uh-huh.
She's in there jamming to my Kiss Alive 2 album while she's getting ready for work.
And it was on red vinyl?
Yeah, remember that?
Well,
Alive 2.
That's kind of rare, the red vinyl. I don't know how rare, but I mean, it's rarer than just the common issue. That's pretty cool.
So I would have to say Alive 2,
uh-huh,
just because it was my first one, but Alive 3 because I saw them on the Revenge tour.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of my favorite tours I've seen them on.
Mm-hmm.
So that one holds a special place.
Yeah. How about Guns N' Roses? What's a favorite Guns N' Roses album?
Probably Appetite.
Yeah. You almost have to because they haven't had a lot, and that album has so many great songs on it.
See, I'm one of the few people that is actually a big fan of Johnny's Democracy.
There's a couple of tunes on there that are pretty cool, but I remember you telling me that you really like that album.
It's way overproduced, way overdone,
mm-hmm,
too many layers. I wish they would do, you know how the Beatles put out Let It Be Naked,
mm-hmm,
a few years ago?
Yeah, I remember that.
I wish Axl would do a Chinese Democracy Naked.
Yeah.
You know, strip away all those layers.
Yeah.
And let's really hear the riffs.
Sure.
Because you can't really distinguish a lot,
mm-hmm,
You know, other than, you know, oh, that's a cool drum fill, I think.
I think. You know,
but I get what he's trying to do. I mean, hell, if I had, you know, $15 million, mm-hmm. it wouldn't hurt my feelings to spend 15 years in a studio tinkering.
Yeah.
You know, I see how it could happen. It's mm-hmm. it's easy to, you know, well, let's try this now. Mm-hmm. Let's add this.
Yeah.
Let's turn water on. Let it run during the song. You know, just whatever you want to do. But yeah, Appetite. I mean, that's any real Guns fan is almost going to say,
yeah,
Appetite.
Sure. How about last one, Alice in Chains?
Oh,
man. What do they need to have in their collection from Alice in Chains?
I tell you what they need. Truthfully, you need to get the music box.
Yeah.
Music bank.
Yeah. 3-disc set. Yeah.
Yeah, they need that whole thing because it covers everything. I mean, if you don't want to spend the money for it, I understand. You know, then Dirt. You know, Dirt is kind of that's the album.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, man. There's something about each one. See, I used to not want to like them. Mm-hmm. When they first came out, I was like, Alice in Chains, horrible name. The yeah. name of the song, Man in the Box, what? Mm-hmm. No, I ain't going to mm-hmm. listen to this.
Yeah.
Finally, I caught it one day, MTV, and I was like, okay, this just blew my mind. And again, Mike Vertrees, we went to high school together. I told him, you know, man, I dig that song. He said, I saw him open it up for Van Halen a while back.
Wow.
And he let me borrow the facelift tape.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they were kind of like Guns, where, you know, you get that first album and it just kicks you right in the teeth. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing they put out is this little acoustic thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's so awesome. And then to come back with Dirt and...
pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I love them.
Yeah. Have you ever met anyone famous?
Kip Douchebag Winger.
Oh, yeah.
I hope you hear that.
Other than, well, you have met some people that I know of. Have you met yeah. anybody that I don't know of other than that particular trip? Well, just tell everybody that back in 2008, you went down to the Rock and Roll yeah. Fantasy Camp down in Nashville at the White Horse Saloon, and there were members of Slaughter and the Cars, and Glenn Hughes was there.
Yeah, Earl Slick.
Earl Slick, Dip Dinger was there. Gilby Clark was there. Yeah. Yeah.
Gilby was cool.
Yeah, he was.
I cornered him in the bathroom.
Okay. All right.
You remember that show?
You want to go there, huh?
You remember that show, Rockstar Supernova?
Sure.
It was him, Jason Newsted, and Tommy Lee were putting together a band looking for a singer. And the guy they picked, I was like, what the hell? This guy ain't good. Uh-huh. You know, I like this other dude better. Uh-huh. So anyway, I'm in the bathroom there at the Wild Horse, and I'm washing my hands. Gilby walks up, starts washing his hands, and I was like, excuse me, sir? Can I ask you a question? And he was cool. He was like, yeah, man, what's up?
Uh-huh.
Probably thought it was going to be some Guns question uh-huh. or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, why the hell did you pick Lucas? And he busted out laughing. He was like, man, it's all Tommy. Yeah, Tommy wanted him from the first time he saw him. We didn't yeah. have no say-so.
Yeah.
And we ended up having breakfast with him and Earl Slick.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do remember that.
Because I put Earl on the spot and said, is Yoko really as evil as she's made out to be?
We had a good time that
yeah,
day.
Yeah, that was a great day other than the douche.
It was like 10 years ago, right around now.
Yeah, it was. It was August.
Yeah, August of 2008.
I don't remember the exact date, though.
We'll say August 12th.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right, so now we want to talk about a band that I think a lot of, not only because I really like their music, but I got to hang out with you guys quite a bit, and that is Slander.
All right, let's do it.
Let's talk about the day that I met you for the first time and your leg was in a cast. We're going back to like February 2002.
Let's see. It was March 2002.
Okay. All right, March 2002.
The week before we met you, we were at Star Studios, mm-hmm. Sean Thomas from Musicians Pro.
Sure.
Recording their very first demo, the Nothing's Free EP. For those of you that don't know the story, I fell down the steps when we were leaving, broke my leg in two places. It's all Chris's fault, and I will go to my death, to the grave, saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But the next week, we had a battle of the bands at the old junior high school.
Bowling Green High School, yeah. I think, yeah. Which is now apartments or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the MC.
That's right.
And I remember you saw us. Here you got Chuck, who's, you know, real professional looking, clean cut guy. Chris with his, you know, David Lee Roth kind of vibe.
Uh-huh.
Travis, who was just 14 or 15 at the time.
He's a child.
Yeah, he was just a little bitty squirt come walking in. And then some guy hobbling in with a cane and a cast.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, I got to meet these guys.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, it was just started from there.
Yeah.
And
you guys did a couple of songs that night. I think they let you do what, two?
Did two songs. Yeah. We did Nothing's Free and Other Side.
That's cool that you remember the tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good night. That was a really good show.
Now, did you guys already had the EP out at that point, or you were just getting it ready?
We had just recorded the basic tracks the weekend before. And then we took that week for me to rest, did that Battle of the Bands, went back that following week, did a little tweaking and mixing, and I believe I had you a copy of the CD by that following Sunday for home cooking.
Yeah.
And
I still have it today.
And you played the unedited version of I Love the Pain.
That's right.
And me and Chris and Chuck and Travis were all calling each other.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear? Yeah, I heard. I'm going to call Chuck, see if he heard. Okay, yeah. I'm going to call Chris, you know.
It's a fun song, man.
Yeah, you know, we were just like kids. You know, we were so excited. Tommy played us.
Yeah.
And then I turned into a stalker.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that.
No, I was stalking you, man. I was sending you emails like, Dear Tommy, I love home cooking. Thank you for playing our song.
I think you were just being polite.
I was stalking you.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But Slander, how long was Slander together?
Me and Travis joined in December 2001.
Mm-hmm.
The last show Slander did.
Not counting the reunion show you did last year.
Yeah, not counting that.
Yeah.
Was May, I can't remember if it was 2008 or 9. I think it was 2009
mm-hmm.
In Cincinnati. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. So you released, what, one EP and two full-length CDs?
Yeah, we did the Nothing's Free EP. Then we did Failure's Not an Option. We did a single, Raising Hell for Rock and Roll.
That's right, yeah.
And then you helped us out and gave us a CD of live recordings.
Oh, yeah.
You took some of like the alternate mixes that Dave had given us
mm-hmm.
and some other cool stuff that... We didn't really formally release it, but we would pass it around.
Yeah, yeah.
We called it Good Times Ensued.
Yeah, I've still got a copy of that. But that was a lot of fun, yeah.
And then Shadows and Ghosts was the last thing we had put out.
Yeah, and then the artwork for that particular release was someone we know here.
Matt Simone.
That's right. Yeah. Mr. Matt, super talent.
He is. Oh, I love his art.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a chance, check him out. He's awesome.
He's done work for you guys, album cover artwork, Chest Rockwell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a couple more. Very talented.
Yeah, he is.
Absolutely.
Met him at trade school.
Yeah. Oh, really? So you knew him for a while before?
Yeah. We met back in 2000. We were both students at trade school for graphic design, desktop publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And, we just hit it off talking about music.
Yeah.
And I was really into his artwork.
Sure. Yeah.
And I remember he got his first art show here at the Capitol.
Yeah.
And he was on top of the world.
Brother, I'm just waiting for him to bust out and be the next big thing. He's that good.
He is.
Yeah.
He is.
Do you have any idea how many shows Slander did?
I say probably by the end, we probably 100 or more.
Oh, you had to have done more than 100.
I know that don't seem like a lot. But I think that's probably close to what we did.
What was it a place? Was it called the Duck Inn that you played one night? Wasn't that in Indiana?
Oh, man, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Wasn't that the night that
Evansville.
The back of the car was way loaded, and we were kind of dragging. I was with you on that
show.
You
and Big D and Chuck sitting between you, between you two. That's right. I forgot about that.
The Duck Inn in Evansville. We were coming back, and that car, because it was really weighted down.
Yeah.
If you get a pretty good bump, it on the ground.
And that's the car. John King always said, every time I see that car, I think of that Beastie Boys video, Sabotage. You know, I'm waiting for y'all to bust out like your TV cops.
And, yeah.
You know, listen, all y'all, is Sabotage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
We should have done that at some point. Some other memorable shows for this land of years. I'm sure probably the Catfish Festival.
The Catfish Festival.
Had a big following over there in Morgantown.
That, I was just thinking about that show the other day for some reason. It was a battle of the bands. There was probably 1,000 people there. We probably had 200 or 300 up front.
Nice.
I always feel conceited talking about stuff like this. No, I don't mean for it to come off that way.
No, we're trying to get the history. We're trying to learn. It's all good.
But out of every band that played, I don't think any other band had a crowd that big for them until Sixth Floor came on after the battle was over and played.
Yeah.
Sadly, we didn't win. The Loft won. but that's cool, though. I remember... the singer coming up to me afterwards, and he's like, man, you guys should have won. And I was like, hey, cool, give me the check.
Give me the check.
And he was like, I can't do that, huh? But me and him became friends, and we would talk a lot, and I learned a lot about the difference between music scenes. Mm-hmm. Now, I got spoiled here in Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. You could go to, you know, Tidball's, Kelly Green's, wherever, and you could see, you know, Sixth Floor and Dryland Fish, Slander and Lee Harvey. Mm-hmm. You know, we mixed genres. All the bands did. You know, it was just the thing to do.
It's kind of cool.
So yeah. I would talk to the guys from the Loft, and I'd be like, hey, man, let's swap some shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you guys play up here a lot. You know, we'll open up for you and, you know, take us down to Nashville, whatever. He's like, yeah, that would be cool, but they don't do that down here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they don't mix genres. It's, you know, these bands are all here. Mm-hmm. These bands are here.
If you're metal, you're here. Yeah, if you're Southern rock, you're here. If you're country, you're here.
So, you know, it wouldn't go over, you know.
Hmm.
But he was amazed that we did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just took it for granted. You know, that's one of the cool things about this area is we could do that. Mm-hmm. And nobody thought about it. Nobody thought it was weird or strange. Yeah. Or it was just natural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's somewhat encouraged, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, after a while. Of course, Slander was together, you said, what, like 2008, you think?
2009, I think, was our last show.
2009. Let's talk about the adventure down to New Orleans.
Oh, that was great.
How did that come about? You guys were doing, weren't you playing for someone? You were doing a showcase?
Yeah, we got invited to come down to play at the Hard Rock. I think it was just the restaurant. I don't think it was a hotel.
No. That was just a restaurant.
Yeah.
The Hard Rock New Orleans.
But it was Epic. Who were the? There was three labels there.
Mm-hmm.
Epic, Atlantic, maybe before they folded or got sold or whatever.
Mm.
And a third, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But the guy from Epic, he really took a shine to us. But anyway, yeah, we got invited to come down, drive all that way to play two songs.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're really into what you're doing, then that is nothing to do that.
Yeah.
You rode with us, of course, you know, that's when I was wearing the glasses, missing the lens.
Yes.
That's a whole nother thing.
That was pretty interesting. I can't see, my eye won't focus.
Because there's no lens in that glass, John. getting off the elevator on the wrong floor at the hotel and the bloody handprint.
Uh-huh.
I still talk about that. Well, there's a bloody handprint next to the elevator.
Uh-huh. Severely stinky shoes.
Yes. I just about killed you.
Uh-huh.
Walking all over New Orleans for that day and a half we were there.
We got kicked out of Coyote Ugly.
Oh, God, yeah. Uh-huh. Because we weren't drinking.
That's right.
We weren't rowdy and uh-huh. got kicked out. That's how right. ironic.
Yeah.
You guys want to order? No, we just want to see you dance. I get the hell out.
Yeah. Well, give us a minute. Maybe we will get something. No, you got to go. Okay, bye.
Yeah, they were very rude. Mm-hmm. And we lived off of McDonald's dollar menu.
That's right.
I remember that.
Uh-huh.
But
went through Biloxi because I was like, can we go through Biloxi? I used to go down there a lot. And you were like, all right, we'll go through Biloxi.
And you said you needed to stop it. I forgot the name of the store.
It was
a big surf shop.
They had a big shark out yeah. front, Sharkies or something. Yeah.
You said, I need to get some new flip-flops.
That's right.
And
I buy my flip-flops at the beach, baby.
And I was like, no, Tommy, they are thong sandals. Get it right. So I gave you hell about thong sandals.
Yes, I think about that sometimes. I'm actually wearing some thong sandals today. Yeah.
But we get to the Hard Rock. They're doing it on like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Mm-hmm. We're like the next to last band to play on Sunday night. And we get up on stage and I'm tuned and I'm ready. And the dude from Epic is sitting out in front of us and he's like, hurry up and play, damn it, hurry up and play.
Yeah.
I hit that first chord and he goes, wow.
Mm.
Blew the head.
Yeah.
And I had to use somebody else's head that had no distortion. My top string got wrapped around my pickup. And I'm like, oh, my God, this sucks. We played Save Me and Down.
Yeah.
And after we got done playing, we sat down with him. First thing he did was look at me and say, you got a sick guitar tone, man. And I'm like, hey, thanks. I work
if you
hard
only
on
heard
it.
Mine.
Yeah. But he wanted to see us again in 6 months. He wanted us to come to Atlanta, do a full set.
Uh-huh.
But things happened.
Yeah.
Members left, new members came in, yeah. never did get the ball rolling mm-hmm. like that again.
Yeah.
And that sucked.
Well, and then of course that slander morphed into, I'll say morphed, into Downpour.
Yeah.
Which was you and Chris and
Ryan Shootman and Kevin Pope.
That's right.
Then Kevin left, and we got Brandon Miller to come in for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And by that point, life was happening
yeah.
for all of us, not just me. Or he was in the military,
mm-hmm.
Brandon was. So we're like, dude, whatever you got to do, man. You know, we're all about
yeah.
what you do.
Yeah.
So, I had stuff going on. Chris had stuff going on. Ryan had stuff going on, too. So we just kind of fizzled.
Mm-hmm. But you did go in the studio and record some songs. Yeah. I don't think you officially released anything, did you?
It was just a little 5-song EP we did at Music Is Me.
Yeah.
Ben Wells and John Lahan owned that.
Yeah.
And we went in there and recorded with them. We sold it at shows, whatever, but we didn't go into big detail with it like we did, Failure or Shadows.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think with Slander and Downpour, you guys recorded what, about 40 songs?
Let's see, probably so. Cause we had a habit of going overboard on the full lengths.
Hey man, the fans appreciate that.
Hey, I've always liked that. If I'm going to spend my money on a CD, then, I want it to be worth it.
Yeah.
I'm biased, because I wrote the stuff and mm-hmm. played on it, whatnot. But, mm-hmm. I don't think there's really a draggy moment mm-hmm. on them. It's 13, 14, 15 songs, boom, 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 kicks my ass.
Out of all the songs that you've written and that you've recorded, or either you've written or you had a part in putting it together, what would be the one song that if somebody's listening right now and they're like, well, I've heard of Slant, I've heard of Downpour, but what's the song that you're like, you know what, go check that out. That's a good representation of either my writing or our playing or all the above.
There's two or three that popped into mind.
Let's hear them, man.
From Downpour, it would be Devilish Things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that song kind of summed up us. We had a heavy vibe, but we were still rock and roll. It was still fun. You can understand what Chris is saying. it kind of shows where we were going.
Mm-hmm.
Downpour was moving into a more, we were becoming more musical. Mm-hmm. You know, the arrangements were getting a little stranger. And that was cool. Down is another song that the message in that song, I think, is good for people. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's basically, you know, talk crap about me to make yourself look better. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, okay, watch out. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you tear me up, I'll tear you down. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably one of the best recorded songs we ever did. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything, that's one of those lightning in a bottle songs. Mm-hmm. Everything from the way Chris sings it. You know, I'm totally overboard on that song. Mm-hmm. Every trick I knew I was doing in that.
Yeah.
You know, little hammer-ons, making it scream, doing the pickup like A's, you know, bop, bop, bop.
Yeah.
The drums, the bass, everything.
You were just firing on all cylinders, you
yeah.
think. Yeah.
And also, if you listen to The River, which is so beyond different from what we do, mm-hmm. you know, you would be surprised that that come from us.
Well,
you know, you listen to Down and I Want and I Pay and I Love the Pain, blah, 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 blah. And then here's this acoustic song with, you know, an organ about an old man in the woods, but it all fits though.
It's diversity, baby.
And I like it. You yeah. know, I like being able to write something that belongs here, but you know it's going to go here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, cool. Well, everybody check that out. Now, probably lastly, what I would want to ask you to kind of wrap it up is what can we expect in your future? Do you have any future plans? I don't think you're playing right now. Are you taking a break? Are you thinking, well, we'll see what happens? What's going on with John Fox?
I'm actually taking a break to heal. Mm-hmm. As people may or may not know, I was a little under the weather last year. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to, you know, get that better. Mm-hmm. I haven't decided, you know, one minute I'm saying, you know, I'm going to call Chris and Ryan and, you know, get Rob and we're going to do a new hybrid Downpour Slander. Another minute I'm like, I just want to record.
Yeah.
Some of the Slander stuff and Downpour stuff that never made it to the studio.
Yeah.
And then another day I'm like, hey, I'm going to holler at Dean Collier, see if he wants to do like a Motorhead type thing.
He would totally do that with you probably.
You know, so it's really so many choices right now. Mm. I don't know where to even start.
Yeah.
You know, I've been listening to a lot of Days of the New lately. I've even thought about going acoustic, you know, with somebody or some people.
Yeah, well.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
So you're saying it's kind of wide open right now. We'll just see where it goes.
Yeah. You never know. I mean, I'm born to surprise.
Now, you've got the mic right there. And of course, there's people listening to this podcast.
Yes.
Do you have anything that you would like to say to anybody out there? Or anything you'd like to reveal? Like, you like a particular type of cheese?
Gouda. No, actually, I would like to take a minute. I'd like to thank you.
Well, thank you.
You know, you've always been real supportive of us. Like I said earlier, you're the first person I always come to when there's something going on with the band or, you know, even me.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, whoops. That just fell.
It's okay. He dropped a contact.
Yeah. My vision is really bad. You know, I want to, even the other host of other local shows.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, I want to thank them. I'll just say, you know, they're doing what they can also. Mm-hmm. And without them, without you, a lot of us would be, you know, at home.
Yeah.
You know, so we need y'all's support. Mm-hmm. To all the bands in the area, the scene is good. It ebb and flows.
Well, of course.
You know,
yeah, everything's like that.
I think, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, I think we were way up here. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think we're a little down now.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got great support, like I say, you know, with you and other stations, Tidballs, Robert Baxter over at Spillway.
Absolutely.
You know, he's really stepped up to help out.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to be original.
Amen on that.
You know, write your own songs. There's only so long you can play somebody else's stuff before people start going, hey, you know, good job playing that guy's song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just going to go home and listen to the record.
Mm-hmm.
Write your own stuff. Trust me, it's going to be better than what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If I could go back in time, I would have told myself that.
Yeah.
You know, trust yourself. Trust your talent, your gift, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So much love to everybody.
Okay. I guess we're going to wrap it at that.
Sounds good.
Okay. We've been chatting with our good friend John Fox here on the Sound Atlas. John, thank you so much for coming up today. And you know that I love you.
Oh, I love you too, Tommy Starr. Thank you for having me.
All right. We're going to wrap it. We're going to call it a day. And then we'll be back soon with another Sound Atlas. John, again, thank you, brother.
Thank you.